anybody out there? I've had to resort to eating dust and wiping my ass with my shoelaces. No, I'm just kidding, everyone. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the MDL Public Podcast.
You know, that's what it is. It's basketball. It's not a f***ing soft sport.
I love it, Gabe. I love it.
The NBL 20 season is over, and perhaps even the world as we know it. But this podcast will continue, so stay on here for good content, or, well, content if nothing else. You can also follow me on Twitter, at NBLPocketPod, P-O-D. Find me on Facebook if you want to send me an email, NBLPocketPodcast@gmail.com, if you've got an idea for a podcast or a question. And then also, you can also call or text me, and you can set your phone to private if you want to keep yourself anonymous, which you're very welcome to do, 0499-396-818. This particular episode, recorded Tuesday, 24th of March, we're looking at free agency special and rumors. Haven't been many free agency rumors thus far, but what we'll be doing here is looking at the big question facing each team going into NBL 21, backed up by a look at their statistical deficiencies and the realistic or subtle player moves they could do to help them combat that deficiency. Nothing sexy, or at least some of these are. Towards the end, I got a little bit more extreme with some of the ideas, but there were some teams that just demanded big import moves. It's very simple to say, oh, this team, you know, every team should sign Scott Machado. Every team should sign Cam Oliver, including Cairns themselves. That's an easy fix to the problem, an expensive, difficult fix, because everybody wants those guys. Who are the subtle guys who perhaps had a down year or perhaps aren't quite as highly touted, who could plug in and fix a hole for you? And don't forget, this is a season in NBL 20 where one win was the difference between third and in the finals and sixth and out of the finals. One game. So if you can find one role player who helps you win one game, all of a sudden you can go from sixth to third. Well, fourth. So let's, without that, so no big sexy moves. You want sexy? Watch Liz Hurley in Bedazzled. You want sexy? Watch Below Her Mouth on Netflix. Filthy, yet strangely arousing. Let's start at the top. We're going to be going from the best team or the winningest team all the way down to the bottom. And we're going to start with the Perth Wildcats, the champions. They obviously need to make the least amount of changes, but they're still an interesting case study. So let's look at it. Perth. The big issue or the big question, a big who can shoot, allowing spread lineups but can still go with Kay at his natural power forward. Can you imagine if Plumlee could shoot or any big they had could really shoot the ball or a small who can shoot? That to me, it's a big question. Their top and tail, the lack of shooting at those two positions allow teams to do interesting defense on Bryce Cotton. And protecting Bryce Cotton and allowing Bryce Cotton to thrive is the Wildcats' number one objective going into next year, I would think. This contention is more of an eye test observation. I don't have any neat and tidy stat to corroborate this idea that they need a shooting big or small. So I wish I had a neat stat for you, but I don't. But I've certainly heard it enough. There's enough number of people who have said this that maybe that counts as a stat towards this. But anyway, I want to look at the internal fix. Is there something this group can do without having to make a move? Because that's the cheapest and easiest way to fix this team or fix this small deficiency in this team. And the answer, I suppose, is a lineup of Cotton, Steindl, White, Wagstaff, Kay, presuming they re-sign all those guys, if any are out of contract. I think, well, obviously, Tirico White is. Gleeson was hesitant to play this lineup. It only played 53 possessions. It was a negative 9 plus minus and a negative 20.8 net rating. That's not particularly good. So perhaps not surprisingly, but in 53 possessions, probably not the case sample size you need to really make an accurate judgment on that lineup. Let's look at the external fixes. Here are guys who, if I was the Perth Wildcats and they were looking to bring back their imports as they are, these are the guys I'd look at to address those two concerns. Daniel Kickett of the Sydney Kings is out of contract. A big who can shoot. Harry Froling is out of contract. A big who can shoot. Kendall Stevens is a long, rangy defender. So you know, this is where you're looking at replacing the Damian Martin or Mitch Norton or backing those two up. Not a point guard, I will admit, but might allow Cotton to do the same. 3 and D. Didn't have a great year at Southeast Melbourne. A lot of teams wouldn't be looking at him. Long defender, can shoot the three ball, we have seen. I haven't got his three-point stats, but we don't need him. We know he's a good shooter. If you can instill confidence in him, I think he's a steal. He's out of contract. And the other one is Tim Conrad of the Illawarra Hawks. Again, out of contract. Interesting little piece. The defense might be an issue, but this is Perth Wildcats. They teach everyone. They could teach a wheelie bin how to play defense. So there, guys, three bigs who can shoot. Kick it, Froling and Conrad, and maybe Kendall Stevens, just so you can push Cotton to the one. Imagine a lineup of Cotton, Stevens, White, Kay, Plumlee, or even if you go real small with Kay and Wagstaff. That's a lineup where all the guys are nice, long, interchangeable defenders and can shoot, and it comes at a pretty cheap price. So Kendall Stevens and Daniel Kickett are the two I'd be most looking for if I was a Wildcat. The question I have for everyone out there is, if they lost Tirico White as rumored to the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, is Clint Steindl capable of being a starter at NBL 21? I haven't got his age, but that's an interesting thought. I mean, we saw how poorly Tirico White shot in the finals and indeed the last end of the year. Was he hurt? Can he still go? Was it a down year? These are things that only the inside of the Wildcats and perhaps Southeast Melbourne know. If they do decide to move off White, or if Southeast Melbourne are highly aggressive, it does allow them to get creative with their third import spot if they bring back Plumlee. I don't know who's out there, but I mean, there's no reason why they couldn't go after a Scott Machado with his kind of money, probably pay a bit more for him. And as I said, I wasn't going to do any sexy moves, but just with that third import spot, if White goes, you've got a couple of interesting things you can do. Let's move on to the Sydney Kings. Okay, this team finished, well, they finished first in the regular season, but technically second overall. The big issue for this team is stopping Bryce Cotton. Rolling it back, do they have what it takes to stop him? And it gets to a point now where it's not like you can say, let's let Bryce Cotton get his and we'll contain everybody else. That's not going to work. He's going to find a way to get his points. So the question I have for everyone out there is Casper Ware the answer to that question of stopping or limiting Bryce Cotton? Seemingly, no. We've seen two finals now where Bryce Cotton has played pretty well. Admittingly, he played much better in this series than he did last year against Casper Ware. But I don't think that was a result of Casper Ware himself, more of a team defense strategy. So let's look at it. Who did Cotton most struggle against in NBL 20? And the answer by a country mile is Cairns. 5 of his 6 lower scoring games against Cairns, and a distant second was New Zealand Breakers. That is no coincidence that his games came against Cairns. And we'll come back to this. An internal fix to this question is, did Luzada, if he continues to stay on the next size program, of which he is contracted, Xavier Cooks, you see where New Zealand were quite, well, had one of Cotton's lowest 6 scoring games. And they put Abercrombie on him for a bit. So maybe Xavier Cooks, is that equivalent at Sydney? Craig Moller, can he move his puppies fast enough but still provide length on Cotton, which seems to bug him? Remains to be seen. Let's look at the more fun external fixes. If the Kings are serious in NBL 21, they'll poach DJ Newble from the Cairns Taipans. And people here are probably saying, well, you know, against Cairns, they threw a lot of doubles at Cotton, and they absolutely did. So you also steal that strategy as well. But there were times, especially in Game 5, where DJ Newble was one-on-one with Cotton and came out on the best. And I remember a couple of steals, forcing turnovers, missing shots. Cotton had some really low-scoring games against Cairns for the reason of doubles, but you can't negate what DJ Newble does as well. Don't forget, the Kings, you know, potentially have a third import spot wide open. They Taylor was an injury replacement. He wasn't technically an import at all. So their imports last year were Tate and Casper Ware. If they're serious, they'll spend and they'll bring in DJ Newble. Imagine a starting lineup of Casper Ware, DJ Newble, Jay Sean Tate, Andrew Bogut, and Xavier Cooks, let's say. That's a pretty damn good lineup. So yeah, re-upping with an import trio of Casper Ware, who's on a player option, and considering he had a pretty down year, we'll probably exercise that. Tate and Newell, who are both free agents, and they need to perhaps cut some of their depth to achieve that monetarily. You know, we're not privy to how much they spend, but obviously the greater talent you have on your bench, the more you're paying them. So maybe if they can re-navigate their bench depth towards more starting concentration of skill, it may be hard for this team to do that, to move off depth and move that money somewhere else. This is a team that's very us against the world and player welfare oriented. Are they too friendly? Friendships don't necessarily win the championships. I don't know if that's bumper sticker worthy, but something to think about. The other thing I thought about this team is they were very low in offensive rebounds. I don't have their stats. I should have kept that. But they were. And I just thought the guy who addresses that, who's out of contract and would be a neat story, is Damian Martin of the Perth Wildcats. Now, I wouldn't have thought he is ever going to leave Perth, but he is from Sydney. Could happen. Bogut's a persuasive fellow. And people think when they think offensive rebounding, they think, oh, let's bring in Cam Oliver. Oh, let's bring in a big. I really feel like if you want to improve your offensive rebounding in this game, bring in a guard who can rebound, like Damian Martin can. The other one is Mitch Norton. Or Mitch McCarron, who's not under contract. But why not get offensive rebounding in places you least suspect it? Everyone expects bigs to rebound. No one expects your point guard to. More of a thought there. Unlikely Damian Martin ever leaves the Perth Wildcats. Let's jump on to the third team in the league, Cairns Taipans. The big issue, rebounding on both offensive and defense. The Taipans finished third last in offensive rebounding percentage and dead last in defensive rebounding percentage and second last in true rebounding percentage. So the eye test tells you and the stats tell you this team doesn't rebound. Let's look at the internal fixes. There's actually a pretty subtle change this team could do if it just wanted to make no change to its team and keep rolling. Quat Noi, he was hurt. He was 14th in the league in true rebounding percentage. Teams rebound better when he's on the floor. And they only played him in 22 of the possible 31 games. So simple change. Just say, we're going to get Quat Noi healthy and we're going to play him and we're going to start him like we did early in the year before his injury. Internal fix, not sexy, doesn't sell tickets, but it might just get the job done and you don't have to spend a dime. Let's look at the external fix that maybe could do this. Provided they're not moving on from any of their imports, which is pretty safe to say. If they're thinking they can do better than Machado, Newell, and Oliver, I think they're mistaken. So let's say they want to get an external fix to rebounding on both ends of the ball. First name that comes up is Dane Pinot. He's got a team option with Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. They'll probably pick that up, but we'll get to Southeast Melbourne later, but I do just want to say now that they have an interesting question on Pinot. They've said all offseason they want defense and athleticism and interchangeability defensively. Pinot doesn't give you that. Pinot gives you great rebounding, great value for money, and mopping up plays and selflessness, and he's a really good player, but is he what Southeast Melbourne need from their spot? What are they paying him? Is he still worth the money? Will he be willing to have the gear he's had and now come off the bench to Ty Wesley and presumably an import five they want to bring in? So when I say Dane Pinot and people scoff, they're like, maybe Southeast Melbourne don't pick up his team option. Interesting thought. The other one is AJ Ogilvy. Player option with the Illawarra Hawks. You would have thought he'd probably opt into that, but maybe he's eager for a change of scenery. Again, a small market guy, so the idea that he would jump from one to the other is plausible. He's a thought. I mean, he adds again that maybe you can play Ogilvy and Cam Oliver together in a way you couldn't quite play Jawai and Oliver together. Something to think about. The other thought is the guy who's out of contract, Anthony Drimmick. Now, you wouldn't think rebounding when you think of Anthony Drimmick, but he is 28th in true rebounding percentage in the league, so that's pretty good for, and he does slot into a position they kind of need, that 2-3, where you could have a lineup of Machado, DJ Newball, Drimmick himself, Cam Oliver and Majuk Deng. Or you could have him with Jarrett, you could have him, maybe come off the bench. He's a guy who could help you. He was a tenacious defender and a pretty damn good rebounder. You concede with the three-point shot with Drimmick, not the best. But a thought nonetheless. Majuk has a team option in Perth. He's a strong rebounder. Maybe he can play on the floor in a way that Juwai can't. And the other one from Perth is Rhys Vaig. Had a bad year with Perth. You wouldn't have thought you'd have to spend on him too big. Has the same true rebounding percentage as Nick Kay. Now, I don't think that they're the same quality rebounder, but, you know, Rhys Vaig is a guy who's been around this league for a long time, hasn't had a huge contribution to those championship-winning Wildcat teams, but has been there. Maybe is set to take the jump. You know, Gleason's pretty quick on the trigger with Vaig. Gave him minutes early, wasn't working out, and pulled the pin. Is there a chance that he could find new feet somewhere else? So my external fixes for the Taipans: Penau, Ogilvy, Drimmick, Majuk, Vaig, and that's it. Let's jump on to the Melbourne United. The big question for this team: harmony, health, and the powered forward spot. Was this team disharmonious in NBL 20? To be fair, they looked pretty harmonious in the finals, so I'm not so sure. The other question I have is, will the return of Casey Prather, with his return, what becomes this team's best starting lineup? My answer: Illy, McCarron, Golding, Prather, Long, with Trimble as the sixth man coming off the bench. That seemed highly effective. Now, whether he's willing to do that again for a whole season from the beginning of the season is the question. The other question I have is, was Chris Golding happy with in United in this season? Was he happy playing on this team? This team went from being his and the say little, think plenty Casper Ware to Trimble and Long. This team went from being Chris Golding and Casper Ware's team to Trimble and Sean Long's overnight, the day they signed both of those guys within a week last offseason. Was Golding happy about that? You know, people sort of look at Trimble and Long as being the issue. Perhaps Golding was the issue. If there was a disharmony there, it's hard for a guy in his early 30s to see these guys come in and supersede. Maybe, maybe not. Just talking out loud. Is Golding the odd man out at 31 stroke 32 years of age? He's set to turn 32 through NBL 21. These are questions I don't have the answers to. Just stuff I'm putting out there. Let's look at the internal fix to Melbourne United's woes. Do nothing. JLA, re-sign him. They have him on a club option, I believe. And hope he, along with Trimble, Long, and McCarron, all mature. This would be your crunch time lineup. Melo Trimble, 28 years old. Mitch McCarron, 28 years old. Chris Golding, 32 years old. Casey Prather, 29 years old. Long, 28 years old. Four of the five players in their prime. Very few lineups in the NBL have that luxury. Perth don't have that luxury. Damian Martin is well off his prime if he's in your crunch lineups. Can't really think of any others, but you know, there's very few teams that have that. Let's look at the external fix for United. Don't let emotion obscure the on-court production. Could you move Chris Golding's money into upgrading at the four spot? And I spoke about this on the last podcast. Is Nick Kay's dominance at the power forward spot, because you look at him, the power rankings of the power forward spot, if you're not including Cam Oliver, the drop-off is big between Nick Kay and the next best. Is it Perth's dirty little secret? So my thought is you move Golding, who presumably wasn't happy, or just isn't on the same timeline, is a probably better way to put it. Move his money to upgrade the four spot. And with this whole coronavirus craziness, are players looking to play a little bit closer to home if the NBA season or if Europe's still a mess? And what I'm talking about there is Brock Modem. Is he out of financial reach? In 2015, he apparently signed a $240,000 EuroLeague contract. That was, you know, 5 years ago. That's $500,000 in Australian dollars. So you're looking at around about to pilfer him from Europe. He's got a European wife, I think a Lithuanian. So maybe he wants to stay there. But, you know, is he out of reach? Could you get him with what they paid some other imports? The other thought is Jonah Bolden. He's in NBL, he's in basketball no man's land. Could you reach out to him and say, hey, let's build you back up and put you back out there? The other sort of cheaper option is Venky Joyce. Played in the G League. I've spoken about this for a while now. He is a guy who gives you a little bit of shooting. He's got a lot of action, but a little bit of shooting and athleticism at the four. These are guys that are all Barlow. I just don't think is of the caliber of a starting power forward anymore. If he's coming off your bench, you feel a lot more comfortable. That was Melbourne United. Let's jump onto the Brisbane Bullets. The big issue, less is more. Another shot creator and ball sharer to ease the late game pressure on Lamar Patterson, I think, is their biggest issue. And I think also the need for a point guard to allow Sobey to play his natural game. The issue of whether they were going to go with a power forward kind of sorted itself out when they decided to put Will Magnay in the starting lineup alongside Hodgson. That seemed to work really, really well in the tail end of this year. Because this team was overloaded, the best place to start to look at is who they have under contract. You can only have as much movability as however many people you don't have on contract. So let's look at who they've got. Here's who's returning. Nathan Sobey, Matt Hodgson, Cam Glidden, Jason Kadee, Will Magnay, and Harrison. Tyrell Harrison, I think is his name. From that, you have three definite starters in Hodgson, Magnay, and Sobey. Add to the mix Patterson, who is a must re-sign, if you're being totally honest with yourself with this team. So the internal fix is simply Carl Vekona, Tarangi, Braun, and Singler. Just Vekona at now 38, 39, I think, are you getting value for money? Tarangi had a bad year, didn't work out. Maybe he's jaded. You cut your losses on him. Good player, but not working. And Braun and Singler, good players, but again, we've shown where depth is nowhere near as important as skill concentration. So I do think you bring back Tarangi. Looking at that, you look at those lists, and Tarangi's the one who I think is the youngest and most likely to play well. So keep him. So I know I said get rid of him, but you know, they're serious about getting in imports and getting three imports who can all play. Yeah, that's a thought. Or if they want to hang on to one of their imports. Anyway, I'll keep going. Depth chart. So let's look at it here. This is what I do. Hodgson, Magnay, Patterson, Sobey, a point guard position with a question mark. And coming off your bench, I think you bring Kadee, Glidden, and Tarangi. And Tarangi is your foul insurance against one of those bigs. So then let's say Hodgson picks up his three fouls, which he's prone to doing, you shift Magnay over and you bring in Tarangi or Patterson. You kind of play that way. I think that's the best way to do things. Unless you want to cull Tarangi and do that with Vekona, both are sensible options. The external fix. And I spoke about this. Depth is not as valuable as skill concentration. Parlay Braun and Singler's salaries into a tempo setting, pass first, in point guard. And the answer might be New Zealand Breakers Sek Henry or a player of that ilk. I think if you went into NBL 21 with a lineup of Hodgson, Magnay, Patterson, Sobey, and Sek Henry, with Kadee, Glidden, and Tarangi coming off your bench as the primary guys off the bench, that's a pretty good lineup. You lose Braun, who was a really nice complementary player in this system, but allowing Sobey to play off the ball increases his value, and he is or was a major investment for this team. You can't just cut loose on Sobey. You can't just say, oh, it didn't quite work out. Oh, well, we'll eat his contract. It doesn't work like that. You've got to get the most out of him. You've signed him. He's a guy you think is a boomer. So you got to put him in position, and his position is off the ball, or at least with another guy who can take that pressure off, not just Patterson. As I've got written here, put the emphasis back on your local boomers, quote unquote, to perform. Sobey and Glidden. And you've got to get Glidden used to, you're coming off the bench for us. You are coming off the bench. You are going to be a flamethrower, sixth man. You're going to get your 25, 30 minutes. But you will be get used to coming off the bench. So don't warm up as hard. Warm up that back. Do whatever you got to do. Sit on a unicycle on the sideline, staying warm. Whatever it is. That's what I think the Brisbane Bullets should do. So their little subtle fix is Sek Henry, who is an import and probably pretty expensive. But could you parlay what you paid Braun and Singler for Sek Henry? And would that be a good idea? I think it would be. Let's jump on to Sek Henry's, well, what I think might be former team, New Zealand Breakers. The big issue for them, provided health is a non-issue, can Hobson and Webster share the ball? Scotty Hobson and Corey Webster. Not saying either of these two are selfish. It's just one ball and a lot of players, and you got to work out whether it's going to work. I had sincere doubts when I first thought about it, remembering that the New Zealand Breakers were poor to start the year. Then I went over it. In the five games that Corey Webster and Scotty Hobson played together in New Zealand, they went 3 of 3. They lost their first two against Sydney when they were just a bit of a mess. Things, you know, they made a cut and brought in Ashley. Dan Shamira's new coach. He hadn't had an off-season. Then they won in Illawarra. Then they lost to Melbourne. Then they beat Cairns, and then they beat Brisbane. So those two together, 3-3, if you win 50% of your games in this league, you more often than not make the finals. So, interesting. The other worry for this team was they finished second last in free throw attempts. Now, they did absolutely shoot the piss out of the ball, both three-point makes and percentage. I think they were either top two or top in both categories. But they were also the second highest in total fouls for teams that did not make the playoffs, make the finals. So there are two things you need to do with this team. Attack the basket maybe a little wee bit more and earn a bit of foul discipline, and that's a result of Brandon Ashley predominantly. Can they have their cake and eat it too? Can they get up that free throw attempt number? Get a little tougher attacking the basket without compromising on their league-leading three-point makes and three-point percentage. There you go. Internal fix. Teach Ashley some foul discipline. He can make threes and long shots, and he can also defend the rim, and he can also attack the basket pretty well. And if you want to minimize fouls, stop him from fouling. He has like four and a half fouls a game. Fouled out in damn near every game he played. The question is, can you? Will he always be that foul-prone player like a Matt Hodgson? That's the question. He certainly didn't show a lot of reliability in doing it late into the year. It just never materialized. I never even saw the roadmap for that improvement. But that's something they've got to do. Let's look at external fixes. These are a little bit more fun. Not so much a fix, but some insurance for the soon-to-be 33-year-old Tom Abercrombie. That might be handy. I feel like this team doesn't need a lot of tinkering. It's a matter of who they lose more than who they want to get. I felt like this team, had they been healthy, would have made the finals. I think they could have jumped Melbourne and put a pressure on those other top teams as well. So if you're looking at external fixes, for a little bit of coverage against Tom Abercrombie, I mean, 33 is old-ish, but it's nice to have. But let's address that concern of a lack of free throws. Tarangi is a guy they've spoken about. He makes sense. Bring him back to New Zealand. If you can get production out of him, you know. But is he positional-wise the guy you want? You kind of want a guy. The guy I've got here is Dan Greta. If you're looking at free throw attempts, this guy attacks the basket really well. Had a down year in Illawarra too, but still managed to be 41st in free throw attempts per 36 minutes. So, you know, that's pretty good. It's not great. But again, we're talking subtle fixes here. So those two, Tarangi and Greta, is there enough time for those guys if they brought them in? I mean, last year they had a pretty tight rotation with their starters, and then they sort of, who came off the bench for this team? Ashley came off the bench for this team. So there probably is minutes for one guy to come in and sneak in there, consume some of those early RJ Hampton minutes that were going, few minutes for Vidanovic. You know, if you're looking at a Tarangi coming in, he can steal some of his minutes. Yeah, Ethan Rusbatch, if you're bringing in Greta. So there is a little bit of wiggle room in this lineup. And I like those two for a subtle address to the New Zealand Breakers' problems or issues. Let's jump on to the Adelaide 36ers. We're getting down the line. We've only got three teams left with this 36ers team. The big issue for this team, three-point shooting. Whoa. Adelaide made the least, attempted the least, and shot the third worst three-point percentage. Wright's system, the former coach of the club, Joey Wright's system, doesn't discourage three-point shooting necessarily. They just don't emphasize three-point shots. So the solution may have been thrust upon them with his departure and perhaps the departure of their imports. Randall was 11th in three-point percentage among point guards. So he wasn't even at the level of a starting point guard in three-point shooting. Ramon Moore, 30.4%, not great. Drimmick, 29.8 from three, which was the 21st worst three-point shooting percentage in the league. Eric Griffin, 33%, was 68th in the league. Not bad for his position, but again, not highly reliable. And then Obi Chay, their starting power forward, was the worst three-point shooter for a player who made one three-point shot. He was one of 12 for the year. Most of them coming in late shot clock situations, so it's not like he was pulling the trigger. Internal fix. Play Daniel Johnson, who shoots him at 43%. Harry Froehling, who shoots him at 41%, provided they re-sign him. And most importantly, Jack McVay, 37%. Doesn't jump off the page, but he's a guy who actually shot a lot along with Johnson. These are two guys who can play. All three of them. There's no reason why they can't take the floor together, I don't think. And I think that's where the Sixers have got to be serious with themselves. And there has been no contract put forward to Harry Froehlich, by the way, if I can just put that out there. There was a lot of talk of him being the 14-second offense creator and that. There has been no talk with Harry Froehlich whatsoever. That's, you heard it here first. Those three can take the floor together. Johnson, Froehlich, and McVay. I don't think you lose a lot if you do that. The big question for this 36ers team going forward, if they re-sign Froehlich, is how do you get those two on the floor together? Johnson and Froehlich, can they do that? That is the big question going forward. Really, are they big enough? Are they agile enough? Are they good enough defensively to stay on the floor? Jack McVay, I don't have worries about. He's a guy who I think didn't get enough minutes and probably should have. External fix. Get imports who can shoot the three. And the name I throw up there is EJ Singler. You know, as much as I said at the start of the program, not doing sexy moves with imports and blah, blah, blah. EJ Singler's not a terribly sexy move. If he was, I'll put this question to you all out there. If EJ Singler was the third import in Adelaide instead of Ramon Moore, do you think they would have pushed for the finals a bit better? I for certain think they would have. Unfortunately, without Joey Wright and his ability to not only coach but recruit, I think that this 36ers team will be the worst team in NBL 21. That's my early prediction, almost 100 games off from the season. Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. Let's jump on. They've already started some rumors of their own in the offseason, early offseason. The big issue for them, and they've already nominated this, and there's an article on NBL.com by Liam Santamaria about this, length and defense. But that must come at a cost without compromising their speed and shooting. The other two big questions for this team is the Ben Magin issue. Is he a starting shooting guard caliber player in NBL 21? The question could be asked, was he a shooting guard? Was he a starter's caliber in NBL 20? The other question is, will Ty Wesley be an import or local in NBL 21? I've got this with a little asterisk next to it. This is vitally important. This dictates their whole damn year. And if they're waiting on the New Zealand office, immigration office, to do something about this, the government is swamped with dole things. You know, you got to look outside of basketball sometimes. The governments of both countries are swamped by other stuff right now. Are they still processing as normal applications for naturalization or citizenship? But that's the big question for them. If he's an import or a local, it totally changes the nature of their conversation next year. Anyway, let's have a look at the internal fix of sorts. I mean, Jay Crockett, who was with this team but no longer, he had the best defensive rating for the team at 114.4, which is not great, but still the best on the team. The other was Kendall Stevens, who had the highest defensive rating as guards on the team. The defensive rating rank on this team went Crockett, Benson, Penoe, Creek, Trist, and Stevens. I can't help but feel towards the end of the year when finals were out of the picture for this team, more minutes for Stevens may have been beneficial. Stevens, who, by the way, is a free agent, unrestricted. As it is constructed, this team does not have length or athleticism at the big spots. It has Ty Wesley, it has Dane Penoe. They're handy players for sure, but neither of them are shot blockers and protect the rim, you know, really take up space. Going back to the Ben Magin issue. Ben Magin has a team option, much like Dane Penaud. Magin was 82nd in the league in PER at 11.4. 82nd. There are 9 teams. So he put up the same PER as, you know, your 10th level guys or 9th level guys. You know, have a think about that. I don't know what I mean by that, but 82nd in PER. Magin's PER of 11.4 puts him tied with Cam Glidden and 0.1% above Sean Bruce, a reminder that both of those players played a heck of a lot less minutes than Ben Magin. And maybe that's a good thing that counts towards PER. It could be potentially, but more often than not, the more minutes you play, the better you play. Let's look at the external fixes here, because they really, other than Kendall Stevens, they don't really have an option to that big lane-blocking defensive big. So the rumor out last week is Tarico White, who's a good option. You know, if your imports going into next year, let's say Ty Wesley is an import, and your imports are Robertson and Tarico White and Ty Wesley, you've done pretty well there. That's pretty good. Tarico White does give you 3-point shooting. He gives you defense and switchability, but not at the expense of 3-point shooting. So he's a good option. That move does look to be one that suggests that Ty Wesley will be a local, and they're going to go after a third import and address that shot blocking concern. They wouldn't be chasing Tarico White, I don't think, if they thought that Ty Wesley was going to be an import again, because then they would still have that glaring gap in the middle, and I don't know how they'd plug that with a local, but let's go on. Other external fixes, Deshaun Taylor, 10th in defensive rating among shooting guards and 14th among guards in general, and 14th in three-point shooting at 38.2%, so he's a guy who maybe you plug in and just gives you a bit of reprieve from Robertson. Again, depends if Wesley's an import. The other name is Miles Plumlee, and I say why not? Signed a one-year deal in Perth, won a contract, maybe wants to live the Melbourne life, likes that East Coast, you know, he's a cool kind of hip cat. Melbourne might suit him down to the ground, who knows? Interesting thing about Miles Plumlee, Bogut has a defensive rating of 100.4. That's the league-leading defensive rebounding because you defensive rating, pardon me, because you want a low one. Plumlee is 101.3. 1.3 points higher. Plumlee just munches up gaps in the lane. I mean, he is huge. They are 1 and 2 in this category. Bogut, then Plumlee. And that's removing some bench players who've crept in by the sort of statistical anomaly. But they're 1 and 2. So, you know, let's not discredit Miles Plumlee as a real defensive player of the year candidate had he played all year and played big minutes. If Wesley naturalizes and their lineup becomes John Robertson, Tarico White, Mitch Creek, Wesley, and Plumlee, and then they sort of roll it back with who they had on the bench and things, that is a pretty damn good team. The other option is Brandon Ashley from New Zealand. Might be a nice option for them at the big. Big, long, can jump up, block shots. Not the defensive rating of those other two I named, but still a consideration. And just quietly, Brandon Ashley is 11th in PER across the league. That's above the likes of Trimble, Mitch Creek, Andrew Bogut, DJ Newball, Scotty Hobson, Machado, just to name a few. Brandon Ashley is the import, I feel, who's got the most upside and untapped potential. But we're talking about South Melbourne, so I'll come back to that. As far as local bigs who could give you length and athleticism, okay, there's not many, but let's have a look. Joe Lual Achul of Melbourne, they have a team option. Maybe they don't exercise that, you know. Was he a shot blocker? Was he a defender? I'm not so sure. Majuk. He's got a Perth team option. Maybe they don't pick him up. The other one is from New Zealand. Atia Majuk barely played, but has the tools to do it. But does he have the mindset? I don't think so. The other one out of New Zealand as well was Deng Deng. Barely played, didn't make the rotation, joined midseason, was making good strides with the Kings in NBL 19. Is he worth another look at? If you're looking further afield, is Isaac Humphries an answer? Seemingly out of the NBA loop with this coronavirus thing, has he lost momentum? Does he return to Australia? Just a thought. Let's jump on to the last team in the league. We're at 38 minutes for this runtime. Let's see if we can keep it under 45. Whew. Illawarra Hawks. Worst team in the league, worst across a number of categories. The only thing they did well was rebounding, but when you miss a lot of shots, of course you're going to rebound a lot. The big issue, what does this team want to be? What do you want to be? And I think more to the point, this is not a big spending club, okay? You can see that on the paper and on the court. You don't need to see player salaries to know that this is not a high-paying club. So the more pertinent question for the Illawarra Hawks becomes, what style of play can deliver the best value for money? Let's say you just want to be a winning team. We want to win as many games as we can on as limited a budget as can. It's always the way in basketball that offense is expensive. If you're a good offensive player, you're paid the most. And you look at the rumors of this. Casper Ware is probably the exception because I heard he signed a big deal. But Cotton is expensive. Machado is expensive. Cam Oliver is expensive. Chris Golding is expensive. Chris Golding is not a great defender. He's a good offensive player, and that's why he's expensive. So my answer to this question is, what is the cheapest way to wins and the best value for money? The answer is defense. And I think this team needs to find the balance of a little bit of PR, a little bit of public relations. Didn't look good when ownership was being forced to pay up or turn over the license. They need to find the balance between PR, entertainment value. LaMelo Ball pushed that a little bit too much into the red. The sort of social media entertainment value was perhaps a bit high. Maybe they can bring that down. So, and the other thing is winning. Everybody wants to see a winner. So they need to find the balance of these three to find a team that if their winning is low, well, maybe their entertainment value is up. They're the three categories they've got to work at. Best value for money, defense, and rebounding. Offensive reboundings in particular. You look at who they've got under contract. Angus Glover, AJ Ogilvie with a player option, Emmett Nahr, Blanchfield, Sunday Deck, Sam Frohling, and technically LaMelo Ball, who they're going to get paid out for when he's drafted. So that's good. By my count of those players on contract, you have three starters. AJ Ogilvie, Blanchfield, and Detch. You have to nail those three. You got to milk them. You've got them under contract. They're starters. You got to milk them. You can't afford to just say, oh, Ogilvie or Detch is not up to the standard. We're going to bench him. Not possible when you're trying to squeeze every penny. The internal fix. Inject some confidence back into AJ Ogilvie. That's a spot that's really weak in the NBL for imports. For locals. Local bigs, both at the power forward and center spot. What can you get out of AJ Ogilvie? This is a guy with borderline boomer. Let's make it happen. Still a young man. 30, 31 years old, I think. And my answer to him is turn him into the best three-point shooting local in the league. Last year from three, he shot 33%. Admittingly, he made seven and shot 21. My question to everyone out there is, let's test this. If we extrapolate his attempts to, say, Daniel Johnson levels, where he shot 30, Daniel Johnson shot 76 three-point attempts last season, Ogilvie 21. If you bump him up to that level of attempts, does the percentage hold true? Does it stay with it, or does he miss less? Why would he miss less, I suppose? This is the Sean Bruce model in Sydney. Get Ogilvie all year saying, we want you to become the preeminent pick-and-pop local big in the NBL. Every pick you set, practice getting your puppies behind the line and letting it fire. And have full confidence and full support of the coaching staff to take that shot each and every time you catch it at any time in the shot clock. That, to me, is the answer. You know, Ogilvie, you just go to him and say, we are going to drain every last bit of talent you got, kid. Like a wet rag, just wring it out. Let's look at external fixes for Illawarra. And boy, you could go in a number of directions, but here was my idea. Blow your wad on a blue chip import. Now, I talked about Todd's program not getting sexy and stupid. We're now getting sexy and stupid in crazy Al McPherson type levels. I suggest Lamar Patterson. Just spend every import dollar you've got allocated on trying to make Lamar Patterson. Don't worry about three imports. Just get one. Get one who's an NBL first teamer. A player who can turn games. Play the four, which is a bit of your weak spot because you don't have it under contract. But the problem with Patterson there was his best matchups or performances against threes instead of fours. I haven't had a look back or can I recall whether he liked going up against smaller guys. I kind of think he did. That's the one hiccup in the plan here. But the NBL has a track record of delivering wins. Lamar Patterson has a track record of delivering NBL wins while consuming a high usage rate. His was a league high 32.2%. Scotty Hobson is the second option. Make one of these two the highest paid import in NBL basketball and try and get him. The other option is maybe Tate, who fills that four spot for the Hawks as well. But can you pry him away from the love-in that is the Sydney Kings? Doubtful. The other target is Harry Frohling, and I know I've mentioned him before, but he's coming off a down year. You know, there's been rumors about his behavior and mindset. Perhaps playing with his brother ignites his desire to dominate. I think if you brought those two together, you're getting two brothers who are inevitably going to go at each other after every practice. So the quality of both of their play is just going to go up. And, you know, they motivate each other in a way that only brothers can. I feel like Harry Frohling makes the most, his value is best for the Illawarra Hawks. You know, it's worth the risk. The other one is Deshaun Taylor. Now, I know I talked about, you know, spending all your wad and getting one import, but maybe let's say you get Patterson and Taylor And I want to make the case for this. I mean, Taylor was a guy who was going to be the starting point guard in Adelaide, right? And it didn't quite happen. Outside of DJ Newball, Deshaun Taylor is the next best defensive guard in the NBL. Maybe Damian Martin slides into that conversation, but of the imports. Oh, Casper Webb. Okay, he's one off. I'll rephrase. But he's certainly the best defensive guard who teams didn't get enough to see of, and isn't the guy who would the nine NBL clubs be looking at Deshaun Taylor's year and going, yep, let's make him one of our top two highest paid imports? I don't think so. He's that third import in that singular Ramon Moore mold. You know, he's that kind of ilk. You get those two players, or you get Froling, Taylor, and Patterson, and their depth chart looks like this. AJ Ogilvy, Lamar Patterson, Todd Blanchfield, Sunday Dech, Deshaun Taylor. Coming off your bench, Harry Froling, Sam Froling, Emmett Nahr, Angus Glover. Could that be the best or the second best defensive backcourt in NBL 21 behind Ilian McCarron? If you had Deshaun Taylor and Sunday Dech as your backcourt, that is the second best defensive backcourt in the NBL. And when you're a good defensive team, good things happen. Look at both the two top teams, Perth and Sydney. Both great defensive teams. So there is a roadmap to success with defense. And you can do it cheaply. Is this a team that is a lock to win the championship and make the finals? No. Is it a team that could jump off the bottom over Adelaide or Breakers that have injury troubles again? Or if it does, or if they don't re-sign Hobson because he gets bigger money elsewhere? You know, if Cairns can't re-sign a few people there, if they don't get Machado back, they're in big trouble. Brisbane, if they don't quite work out what they need, you know, and don't get Lamar Patterson, maybe, you know, there's a lot of what ifs. But this is a team with that lineup would jump off the bottom, would jump over Adelaide, as their roster is currently constructed and the way it's coached, for sure. The elephant in the room with the Hawks is coach Matt Flynn. Is he at the level of an NBL coach? Will he mature into the job? They signed him for 3 years. I think it was their expectation that year one would be bad, year two would be okay, and year three is hopefully good. Well, we're going into year two now. It needs to be good. It can't be so-so. It can't be bad like it was this year. It has to be good. It has to be structured. It has to be forceful. It has to be confident. It wasn't those three things in NBL 20. It wasn't organized. You had multiple changes to the starting lineups. Now, a lot of injury changes and, you know, a lot of stuff, but you had injury problems, you had strange rotations, you had players in and out of the lineup, you had a lack of development from Greeter, took a step backwards. Angus Glover was the one guy who took a step forward. You know, so do they have the ability to look beyond their Wollongong guys? You know, I think Greeter's from WA. Is Dan Greeter your future, or is some of the other younger guys? Emmett Nahr didn't get minutes. It was bizarre. Anyway, we could talk about that for a long time, but that's it. That's all I have for you. I hope you enjoyed some of the ideas, and at very least, if you disagree with some of the ideas I've got, you can at least see my workings out and rationale. As I have said, it's very easy to say sign Machado, sign Oliver, sign Sean Long or some other import stud. They're one in a million players, and that's what you pay for, and you pay big for them. A slight improvement can go a long way. After all, there was one win between third and sixth in NBL 20. Something to think about. Contact me on Twitter at NBLPocketPod, email NBLPocketPodcast@gmail.com. or call or text on 0499-396-818. Thank you very much, and I'll see you next time. And everyone, wash your hands and be safe. Social distance, so on and so forth.